It's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mangrove aroma always coming through. Always coming through. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up. It's Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
And a good morning to my loyal listeners in Radio Land. Wake up, make the coffee. Folgers, Sanka, Maxwell House, which is, of course, good to the last drop, or the beverage or libation of your choice. It's time for Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, a.k.a. a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Dr. Feynman, a presidential scholar, historian, our resident and official of sorts, political commentator, will be joining us very shortly to discuss the latest ramblings, rumblings, tumblings, and mumblings with the President and other important officials. But first, please stand or sit, take a knee. Our national anthem. And that's my name, and discussing the topics of the day, that's my game. Thank you very much for lending an ear. I can assure you this will be time well spent. Without further ado, let's take a little trip south-southeast to the Sunshine State of Florida, and hopefully I've patched in all the right cables, pressed the right buttons, plugged A into B. Dr. Ronald Feynman joining me from the Sunshine State. Ron, how are you today?
Good morning, Adam. I'm doing fine. I thank you again for inviting me. Now the 23rd time I've been on WWGH and the 16th time with you.
Number 23, that's a very nice prime number in my mathematical field. Now, my field being math and science, I just have an MS, Ron, but you have a PhD and are probably one of the leading authorities on presidents and contemporary American history. And with the current state of what's going on in Washington, could there possibly be more things to talk about from a contemporary American history and current events standpoint?
We could go on for hours and hours and never run out of material, Adam. It's unbelievable what's going on.
That's why I said, why bother talking about topics on Sunday like we often do? Just go ahead and talk about them Monday evening, because more than likely something is going to transpire. And sure enough, one of the big stories this morning, drum roll please, Donald Trump said that Mr. Corker could not get I can't say this with a straight face, that Mr. Corker could, because Corker is kind of a funny name anyway. He said that Senator Bob Corker could not get elected dog catcher. Now, part of the reason why I think that's funny, Ron, is that he said kind of a similar thing about your senator, Little Marco, or Marco Rubio, that he couldn't get elected dog catcher.
And don't forget, he calls Bob Corker Little, L-I-D-D-L-E, misspelling the word little. He likes to make fun of people who are short. And I resent, since I guess I'm in that category of being short.
But think about Mr. Rubio. He may be short, but he has rather large ears. I've always thought that was kind of interesting. But he does, doesn't he?
Spend time looking at things like that?
Yeah, he does have rather large ears, but I guess in the height department, he was a bit shortchanged. Wouldn't be trying out for the Miami Heat basketball team anytime soon, no doubt. Now, as we talked about on the phone before taking the airwaves, Ron, Corker and Trump used to be buddies, and that obviously has soured just a bit.
Yes, Corker actually was against the Iran deal in 2015 that Barack Obama brought about. And John Kerry, and he wrote an article about it, an editorial, I guess, an opinion in the Washington Post. But obviously, I guess either Donald Trump does not read the Washington Post; he only pays attention to Fox News Channel, and places like that, or else he just forgot. But then, after all, this is a man who can't remember the name Johnson of the soldier who died for us. I mean, it's not like it's a complex name that he couldn't remember the name, but. The man really lacks intellectual ability and no memory about anything, and it's a sign to me that he is really starting to show dementia.
Interesting that we've had two President Johnsons and even had an independent candidate, Johnson, running against Donald Trump. He must not like that name. Maybe he didn't like Howard Johnson's. He had a bad experience. Or Johnson & Johnson not quite. S.C. Johnson Wax, maybe he uses a different brand of floor wax. I don't know. Interesting, though. Yeah, it seems like he has trouble with such a simple name, yet he can pronounce and spell Mar-a-Lago really well. So, not quite sure what that might be about. You are listening to
also said that the White House was indeed a dump compared to Mar-a-Lago. I don't know if that's true, but what a thing to say about the White House.
Well, if he doesn't like it, he knows where the door is.
Yes, he does.
You are listening to...
I think he might have to be pulled out kicking and screaming, because I don't think he wants to give it up.
You are tuned to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Adam, that's I. And on the line with me, live from Florida, Boca Raton, I'll never pronounce it Raton again, is Dr. Ronald Fineman, PhD, a person with a lot of knowledge about presidents and contemporary history. He teaches part-time and not one to shy away from a comment or two. And again, we like to talk about the president. And again, if you don't agree with us, that's okay. We invite all perspectives. Debating is welcome. Don't be shy. The phone number at the station is YES-687-TECH, a special number I've set up for this show, 937-687-8324. I'm also broadcasting a live video of my show on my Facebook page. Look up Adam Leppin, Ohio, or Adam the Computer Guy. Watch me do the show, and you can even hear Dr. Fineman's comments and interesting commentary and feedback during this video by a little system that I've rigged up here. So anyway, Ron, all comedy aside, and the dog catcher comments, I guess Trump has a thing about that. I'm not sure, even though he doesn't like dogs, from my understanding. I guess, interesting, ironically, Ron, and I saw this also, maybe a lighter story, the Trumps are the first presidential family without a pet in a long time.
That's right. I was about to say that. They have no interest in pets. I think that's really strange. Every president, just about, at least that I can think of, has had a dog or some kind of a pet, but most often a dog. And there's a whole exhibit, in fact, at the Smithsonian about that.
And Mr. Pence, I guess they have a rabbit. Their cat had died. They got a new cat, and they have a dog also. So they have a bit of a menagerie. But I guess Donald Trump doesn't like dogs and cats. I guess Ivana or Ivanka, I always confuse them. She had a dog, and the dog and Donald didn't get along. So, I mean, it's not a big deal. I mean, I don't think this is a bad thing about Trump. Some people are dog people, some aren't. But he likes to talk about dog catchers with politicians he may not be overly fond of, yet he's not a dog person himself. So I'm not quite sure if there's anything to read into that. But it was kind of interesting. Speaking of dogs, Ron, again, being the presidential historian and guru that you are, I guess Nixon's dog Checkers, Nixon being one of my favorite presidents, the Checkers speech, and Checkers was his dog.
That he was running for vice president in 1952, yes.
Does that have kind of a place in pop culture, or is Checkers a bit of a folk hero like some of these dogs are, or you know, like Mill, I guess Millie, Barbara Bush's dog, and Millie wrote a book, I guess, a ghost written by Barbara.
Well, I think in the case of Checkers, he gets attention because that was used by Richard Nixon as an excuse for the slush fund that he was getting from Southern California businessmen, which was technically illegal, and he somehow managed to manipulate his way out of that and appeal to the audience listening on radio about the idea that that he was being victimized because he had accepted a puppy dog for his two young daughters. But that was not the issue. It was the slush fund that he was engaged in that made Eisenhower think of dropping him from the ticket in 1952. But then the appeal, you know, to the audience, it got so many people to call up and say keep Nixon on the ticket, so he remains on the ticket. But that's one of the things he wrote about in his 1962 book Six Crises, about crises in his life really manufactured and caused by himself, but only the beginning, because then came, of course, his presidency in Watergate.
I guess, interestingly enough, I don't know how it works in Florida, Ron, but I don't think the dog catcher is an elected office that you're appointed by the city or the county. And so,
I believe so. And actually, it's not that easy a job. I don't think Donald Trump would be capable of doing it. He'd have to actually bend over and really do some physical labor to do it. I don't think he would want to do that.
And he has those bone spurs in his foot that I guess he showed John McCain. I saw a story about that also, that's why he couldn't be in the military. So that might have...
A pretty poor excuse, to say the least.
Yeah, and I mean...
And John McCain, I understand now it's the 50th anniversary coming up of his capture by North Vietnam, and now he may be, as they say, you know, nearing the end of his life, Senator McCain, but he's really someone to admire and to honor, and I'm glad to see that he got that award from the Constitution Center in Philadelphia recently, given to him by Joe Biden, of all people, which shows the close camaraderie and bipartisanship these two men had.
I would think that dog catcher would be a rather dangerous job. You're catching dogs, many of whom are probably not sweet little poodles. They're probably
exactly,
pit bulls and,
yes,
and Great Danes, and they don't want to be captured, and you might risk being bitten. I don't know. I mean, it would be an interesting job, but I don't think I'd want that job, and I think I'd rather have an office job where there really are no occupational hazards like irate dogs trying to kill you. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I want to say that we're coming up to Thanksgiving. I wonder if Donald Trump's going to do the normal pardoning of turkeys and whether they'll have a turkey nip at him like nipped at George W. Bush, you know, back in the early years of the Bush administration. That could be a dangerous job if the turkey gets belligerent.
Well, that'll certainly be interesting, and I'm sure it'll get a lot of coverage on the fake news media that Donald Trump always likes to talk about. You are tuned to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Speaking live about current events, a little bit of lighthearted humor and wisecracks, but there really is never a show with yours truly that doesn't have a wisecrack at least every 5 minutes. Dr. Ronald Feynman on the line with me. Of course, you can leave a comment on our Facebook page for the radio station or my personal Facebook page. You can watch me on live video, or best yet, give me a call. We have a special number set up, 937-687-8324. Nick C.J. From Wales and the U.K. joined me last hour on the show. I guess we can kind of make the theme of this morning's show, interesting accents. What do you think of Nick's British accent, Ron, is it quite cool the way he speaks the Queen's English? Is it kind of a refreshing to hear that accent every once in a while?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really great. I love the British, and I love the way they speak, you know, the different areas of Britain. But just like in our country, we have different ways of speaking. Like I've noticed in the South, they talk about what I call insurance, and they say insurance. And I say, no, it's insurance. S-U-R is the key thing. But they love in the South to say insurance. I don't know why, because that is not proper English. But there's different forms of English all over the United States and even in Great Britain.
Yeah, I mean, here in Ohio, especially in more southeastern Ohio, they do kind of say insurance. And my background is more East Coast, more upstate New York. But I've always said insurance, but you do hear insurance a lot. So,
but I find it annoys when I hear this saying insurance, and I'm thinking, speak properly.
We did discuss, again, somewhat lightheartedly, that President Carter, that he would say barbiturate instead of barbiturate, which is the way I always thought it was. But again, he is from Georgia. They do say things a little differently there, like they say y'all.
It's time to get used to Jimmy Carter. And his Attorney General, Griffin Bell, I could never figure him out for the 4 years he was Attorney General, the way he spoke. It was very hard to understand Griffin Bell.
And, you know, my mom, when she heard President Carter say barbiturates, she almost fell on the floor. She couldn't believe it. But she had, I guess, she may she rest in peace, but she kind of thought anybody from the South was a hick. And ironically, two of our most intelligent presidents were Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, both from the Deep South. So,
yes.
Sorry, Mom. I mean, yes, there are smart people and dumb people in every state. Let's talk about that. Let's go to your home state, Ron, New York State, and our beloved President Donald. In terms of IQ, Ron, we talked about how Carter and Clinton have two of the highest IQs of any president. Where do you think Donald Trump sits in that IQ rank among all of our presidents?
Well, I don't actually know, but I do think he indicates lack of knowledge is one of the big problems, lack of interest in learning, and I would think that his IQ is not one of the highest. But of course, there's no way to really know unless they did testing, but he doesn't come across as very interested in learning or in any kind of intellectual pursuits. And it's disturbing, particularly that he's from Queens, New York, where I, in fact, was born in the same hospital I was born in, Jamaica Hospital, Jamaica, Queens, New York. But I think what it comes down to is he led a life of privilege, being born to a wealthy family and never really wanting to have to work too hard to accomplish anything without help from upstairs, meaning from his father. So he doesn't know what it is to struggle, I don't think. I think he's having trouble right now because this is the hardest job in his life, and he's finally admitting it after thinking it would be the easiest job in his life to be president.
Now, just because someone may have trouble with English and sentence structure doesn't mean that he or she isn't intelligent. I've always been big on grammar and spelling. Again, you know, my mom, she instilled that in me, and it's still a hobby to this day. But
yeah, just to bring out that George W. Bush always said nuclear instead of nuclear.
Right, he said, yeah, nuclear. But I think we'd agree. Yeah, he has an MBA. He is not a dumb man at all. But yeah, diction wasn't his strong point. But I think George W. is pretty smart, and he's a good businessman, and I think a very ethical businessman. He'll be the first to admit, and maybe Dan Quayle the same way. Spelling and diction isn't really his strong point, but there are many things that he is good at.
George also has a good sense of humor. He can laugh at himself. Donald Trump cannot laugh at anything. That's a big problem for him health-wise, I think.
Right. I never take myself too seriously.
Or even joke about himself. He really can't.
Yeah, you kind of wonder about the guy's sense of humor. He is amusing because of what he says, and he's made up words like bigly and huge, but inside you kind of wonder about the guy.
And China instead of China.
Yeah, well, that's certainly different, but as I said, he certainly is fodder for talk shows and news shows, as we can well attest to. It seems like even though this is show number 23, we could spend 23 hours talking about Donald Trump, and we still wouldn't run out of things to say, so...
No, he will certainly be one of the most written about presidents in history, no question about it.
Now, Ron, you write a popular blog called theprogressiveprofessor.com, and you spew forth historical tidbits and knowledge, some lighthearted and some rather serious, and things we probably need to pay attention to. Let's go to the blog that you wrote on Sunday. And we talked about on the air, Ron, like myself, I mean, you like to speak and dignified, and, you know, you are an intellectual, certainly a scholar, a professor. Students, your own students read your blog, and I'm sure they comment about it, good or bad comments. And you said you found yourself over the last few weeks not being quite the gentleman in how you express yourself that you historically have been. And the title of your blog on Sunday was pretty much sums it up. Donald Trump, : psychopath and sociopath. Now, Ron, a couple of years ago, could you imagine yourself writing a headline that comes across so strongly?
No, and I am sorry that I felt the need to do that, but I'm not the only one. People much more well-known or more significant than I have said the same thing. We are in a constitutional crisis much worse than Richard Nixon. This man is dangerous, as Bob Corker has just said this morning, that, you know, that he thinks that we could be nearing World War III. He has said it before. He's not, Bob Corker of Tennessee, a man that's loose with his language. He's not someone who's seen as nutty or anything. He's very responsible. And he actually backed Trump in 2015 and 16 and was critical of the Iran deal that Barack Obama negotiated, and even wrote about it in the Washington Post, an opinion column. And yet he's being attacked by Trump now, and Trump is going after this Gold Star widow, and insisting, you know, what he wants to say, that he said it the way he was supposed to say, that he knew the man's name was Johnson, and he messed that up. And I mean, he just refuses, and he even has his chief of staff, Kelly, get involved in this and refuse to apologize for his insulting the Congresswoman Wilson. I mean, it's just gone too far, and there's just no apology or no admitting errors, and it's really a very dangerous situation, particularly in international affairs, where I'm sure Kim Jong-un, as crazy as he is really concerned about Trump's stability, and that could lead to an accidental war that would be a disaster.
Oh, speaking of Congressperson Federica Wilson, now she is from your neck of the woods. She's not your congressperson, but she's from like 60 miles to the south, so she's certainly
in Miami, yes.
A local person. The first question, before we get into more serious issues, what's up with those hats? Does she and Ted Nugent buy her hats from the same place?
She just seems to like these hats.
Right, they both wear...
I'm not sure why. She is certainly eccentric. There's no question about it. She's not the only person in Congress who is eccentric, but she certainly is good cannon fodder for comedians. There's no question about it. And it allows John Kelly to insult her, which is wrong still, and for the president to ridicule her, which is still wrong, but certainly her eccentricity stands out.
It seems like she and one of my favorite classic rock performers, the very controversial Ted Nugent, both like to wear cowboy hats that look like they're too small. I don't know if they buy their hats from the same hatter. I guess that's what it's called, a hatter. Or it's just part of their image. But bottom line is, I mean, I'm certainly someone who's not afraid to show an eccentricity from time to time. That aside, Ron, is she a smart person and a good congresswoman? Or
well, from what I gather, I've read that she's done very, very good things for her district, and she has come across as a person who is responsible, but she is just in her personality a little bit different. The thing that disturbs me most is that he gave away the hint about the fact that he was upset. I'm talking about Trump, that he was upset, not just about the upset that it was a woman that spoke. He said a woman, and then he slipped and said a person, but he meant a woman. And I think there's a problem with women and with gender and with race because she's a black woman. I'm not sure with a white woman or a white man, anyway, certainly with a white man, that it would be the same reaction. So his misogyny and racism still show through, and Kelly did not distinguish himself by his reaction. He really went too far, and he should apologize, as the Washington Post said, to Congresswoman Wilson, but it looks like he's not going to do it, and I think that undermines his credibility as chief of staff.
So you would say Wilson probably is a good congressperson.
She does the job for her district. She's a little eccentric. There are eccentric people, but they do their job. There's no indications of anything negative or anything corrupt in her, you know, 6-plus years that she's been there. And she represents her constituents well, and she's not a publicity seeker. This lie about that she bragged about that particular thing that she was speaking about in 15 at this dedication about this about veterans, she didn't do that. It was shown on the tape. She never did that. But at the same time, I'm thinking, while listening to Kelly, you're saying that she's bragging. What about your boss bragging all the time and creating stories up? And, you know, it's just amazing to me. The whole thing is like, is he blind to what's going on right around him? And he's supposed to be there to control Trump? It's very disturbing and very worrisome.
Do you have friends or family, Ron, who live in Wilson's district, and do they vote for her?
No family. There might be some of my students might, but I do not know for sure. I know there are people who live in Miami who have been in my classes, but I do not know, you know, anybody directly that voted for her. No.
I guess she at one time had run for Senate and lost to Little Marco as Donald Trump.
No, that's Kendrick Meek, who was the predecessor to that seat. He ran and lost, and that's how she came to run for his position, because he gave up his House seat to run for senator in 2010, Kendrick Meek.
Apparently, Wilson's been in the news quite often. Let's rewind.
Well, she's outspoken. The fact is, that she's outspoken, and that makes people pay attention to her. And I'm not going to say everything she says I necessarily agree with, but I do think that she still should not show lack of respect for the fact she's a member of Congress. And it should not matter if you're black, white, male, female, or whatever. You know, and that's why it's not a good idea to attack members of Congress.
Right. She ran in 2010 in an 8-person Democratic primary to succeed Kendrick Meek, and then lost to Marco Rubio.
Kendrick Meek lost to, Kendrick Meek ran against Marco Rubio and also Charlie Crist, the governor, in a three-way race, and of course, Rubio won that seat.
Do you think she could be, I think she's in her 60s, I mean, she's not, you know, she's relatively young for someone that, in a high office. Do you think she might run for senator or governor, or do you think she's kind of happy with her position
as congressperson? Well, next year the race is going to be of Senator Bill Nelson, Democrat. She's not going to challenge him. And probably Governor Rick Scott, the Republican, who I think is terrible, one of the worst governors in the country. But he's now term limited. After 8 years next year, he will have to. So he's going to run for the Senate. So, no, she would not be running. And, of course, Rubio's seat would not come up to 2022. So there's no chance she will go any higher than the House of Representatives.
Do you think she'd be good in a higher office? Maybe even something like vice president? Would she be good at? Would that be a good office for her?
Well, honestly, I would say no, although I'm not too happy about the man who's vice president right now with some of his narrow-minded, bigoted views. It, you know, he's not like Trump in the sense of using Twitter and all that, but I'm not very happy with Mike Pence as the heir apparent because I don't think he's the right person, but he probably will be the next president of the United States sometime during this term.
Rewind back to 2012 when Trayvon Martin, in a very well-publicized case that remains controversial to this day, when he was shot and killed by George Zimmerman, he was a constituent of Federica Wilson, and then she organized rallies and called for new laws to curb racial profiling. So I think one thing, I mean, a lover or a hater, yeah, she's controversial. I mean, I like the fact that she is smart. She cares about her district. She's not someone...
Absolutely. I think she's very dedicated, no question about it.
And she's not afraid to get embroiled in controversy, and people love her or they hate her. But I think she does care. She works very hard and does care about her constituency and wants to make the world a better place. And you got to love her for that, so...
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's no question of her commitment. And I think what she says against Trump is certainly, you know, is based on the truth. And he's lying, but that's nothing new. As the New York Times and Washington Post have said, he lies on the average five times a day. If you averaged it out, he lies more than any president. That's why I once said, I think I said on this show, that it's not totally true, but the story is George Washington, you can never tell a lie, which of course is not 100% true because all people lie at times, but that basically he could not tell a lie. And Donald Trump could not tell the truth.
When she was elected to Congress in 2010, she learned that there was a rule banning hats on the floor since the 19th century. She briefly lobbied to get the rule overturned. According to Federica Wilson, her love of hats goes back to her grandmother, for whom she is named. She said, "When I was a little girl, they all wore hats and gloves. I was always a prissy little girl who wanted to be like my grandmother." She was also named one of D.C.'s most beautiful people by The Hill 4 years ago. Now, I don't claim to be the best judge of looks, but I'm not sure I agree with that designation. She's certainly interesting. I think she is very smart, but I'm not sure about beautiful, but I guess that is a matter of opinion.
Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, as we know.
Or, as they say, in the eyes of the beer holder, as some people say.
Well, that could distort your view, though.
Maybe that's what happened. Who knows? Adam Lepp here, live in the studio in Marion, Ohio, with a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Dr. Ronald Fineman, being our professor on the line with me, discussing the issues of the day, some lighthearted, some very serious, such as North Korea, the threat of a global nuclear war, environmental issues, again, things that are quite serious that we need to, I think we need to address. We are taking your telephone calls at my special number for the show, Yes 687 Tech, which is 937-687-8324. Again, Ron, you are the author of the very popular blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and one of the things, and again, probably a more positive story that you've discussed, would be the fact that we have five living former presidents. And at some time in the future, we may have the five living presidents alive for the longest period of time. And also, if Donald Trump does not finish his term, which you and I tend to think will happen, we very well could have six
former presidents. Six former presidents. That'd be an all-time record, yes.
And
yeah, but I want to point out that the five living former presidents, if they reach June 6th, 2020, they will have been alive longer in a term of the new president than anyone in history, because from 2001 to 4, until Ronald Reagan died on June 5th, 2004, we had like 3 years and 4.5 months of having 5 former presidents. That's the all-time record, the longest period. The earlier time was 1993-94, for about 15 months until Richard Nixon died, we had 5 former presidents. And 1861-62, we had 5 former presidents for about 10 months until John Tyler died in January 1862. So if they can live, it's still a long time to go, they can live all 5 of them to January, to June 6, 2020, it would be an all-time record of longevity of 5 former presidents in a term.
I don't want to sound too down, Ron, but do you think that we'll lose Mr. Bush number one or Carter first? It seems like Carter has recovered so well from a cancer diagnosis, and George H.W. Bush just doesn't look very healthy with the wheelchair.
No, but I must say they both have survived so much. Bush Sr. may not be able to walk anymore, and he's in a wheelchair, and he doesn't look so good as last week at Texas A&M, but he has supposedly been gone for the last 5-6 years, and he keeps on coming back. Carter's had cancer remission. He seems in very good shape, and now he's offered, apparently, if Trump is willing, to go to North Korea to negotiate with Kim Jong-un, which is quite a mind-boggling thing if he was allowed to do that. I'm not sure how successful that would be, but imagine a 93-year-old former president going to see someone who could be his grandson, or even, not great-grandson, but I guess at least maybe even great-grandson, yeah, possibly. But the whole idea of that, I would think to have them live to 96, I think the way things are going, and with health care for presidents and former presidents, it is possible that both could survive until past June 5th, 2020.
Kim Jong-un is only about 36, 37, right? He's a fairly young man.
I think he's about 35, actually, or 34, actually. I think I think he's a little, he might even be 33, because my youngest son is 33, and I think he may have been born shortly after. He might even be 32, 33. I'm not even sure exactly. It's never been made clear, but he's in his mid-30s in any case.
Well, that's interesting, Ron, because you and President Donald are, but you're slightly older than President Donald, but you were born in the same hospital, and your son is the same age as Kim Jong-un. Well, isn't that an interesting interesting little tidbit?
I guess that, and however much the subway token is, will get you on the subway in New York. I don't even know what it is anymore, because I don't live in New York City anymore.
That and 50 cents will get you 2 quarters, as I say, but I certainly find it to be an interesting tidbit, to say the least. Adam Lepp here live in the studio with a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. 14 minutes to go. Linda Sims coming up after the 11 o'clock features, news, promos of shows past, present, and future, and messages from our valued sponsors, underwriters, and supporters, discussing interesting issues of the day, some very serious and some a little more lighthearted, with, again, Dr. Ronald Fineman. Taking your telephone calls at 937-687-8324, or you can also leave a comment, question, suggestion, complaint, or topic of debate on our Facebook page, or message me. If you're not already a Facebook friend of mine, please become one. Look up Adam Lepp in Ohio or Adam the Computer Guy. I guess President Carter has offered, as you talked about, Ron, to help President Trump with some matters. And we know Trump is a bit on the egotistical side, but do you think maybe he should take a step back and realize that some people like President Carter could provide a wealth of knowledge to him, and maybe he should open up his mind a little bit?
Well, that's the issue. Will he open up his mind to allow Carter, who he's been always a major critic of for 40 years, to be engaged? I think it would be a smart thing on Trump's part, but I don't know if he's going to agree to it. There's been no response yet, but I think it would be a very good thing to do that, and I would hope that for the sake of possibly avoiding a war, that this be done. Not that there's a guarantee that Carter can accomplish anything, but what's the old saying I've always told students? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. 4 words that are so true. Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
And, right, as we say, minds are like parachutes. They only work when they're open. And
that's a good line. I like that.
And I would say Donald Trump has a problem with being open-minded. And, again, it's a case of this isn't a good or bad thing I'm saying. He had no political elected office experience prior to becoming the leader of the free world, and maybe he needs to take some advice. I would think advice from someone who was president in the 70s and is still very visible. Someone who even 90 years old, he's building houses for Habitat for Humanity. Someone like that could be very beneficial. And maybe he needs to stop, look, and listen. I mean, again, let him go ahead and bash. I mean, politicians do that. But I think maybe spending less time bashing, less time golfing, and more time listening to the president's emeriti, if that's a word, might be helpful. I mean, Ron is someone in the educational business, as someone who's been a professor, who's been professoring for 40, 45 years. I assume you've always listened to your department chair and to your fellow professors and even your students, that you can learn something from all those people.
Well, I've learned so much over the years, not just from department chairs and colleagues, but from students. I've always said a good professor, a good teacher, learns from his students as well as teaching them. You know, we can all learn more. We're not geniuses. We don't know everything. We don't see every perspective. It's always worth it to communicate with others and have an open mind. And seriously, many students have affected me a great deal over the years, and I've been close in friendship with a number of them.
Now, in the professoring, if that's a word, I guess I can make up a word because the president does also.
Well, say professing.
Professoring. Well, if Donald Trump can make up words, well, so can I. So in your professorial pursuits, how about that? That's a word this year. Again, you talk about history, and I guess probably no secret that you're not exactly a president of the Donald Trump fan club. Have students confronted you or challenged you and said, well, either I disagree, professor, that I think Donald Trump is a good president, or maybe I don't like him either, but you're a little too harsh, like calling him a psychopath. Has that come up at all in your classes?
Well, I haven't said that in class. I have not said that in class. I probably wouldn't, because I don't think it'd be appropriate. But in writing, I think it's acceptable. But I would not say that term in
class. But you have students
who... someone notices what I've written on there, and I don't directly advertise the blog, so it's more they just look me up, they may find it. Then I would say, yeah, that's what I think, but I would not really elaborate on it in class. I try to be as neutral as possible, which is not easy when it comes to a class as far as giving my views, trying to give a balanced presentation. I may not be perfect at it, but I try my best.
Right. I mean, I'm sure your students read the blog, but you're...
Well, maybe some. I'm not sure how many, but, you know, because you got to realize we live in this generation where a lot of people don't do the four-letter word, read. I've joked in the beginning of classes that you need to read or you have to read the book, and then I'll cover my mouth and they'll say, what's the matter? I say, I'm sorry, I used a four-letter word, and they laugh.
Right, but also your fellow faculty, I mean, they certainly know about the blog. Does that ever come up in the break room or where you professors hang out? Have you gotten into...
I think most people in my department probably agree with me. Not everybody comments on it. You got to realize that the professoriate in general, in the social and behavioral sciences, humanities, and the arts, most professors probably are on the left side, the liberal side. When it comes to science, technology, and business, they're more likely to be conservatives. And obviously, we don't communicate too much with those people because they're not right there. You know, they're in a different building or a different location. So, but I do think that depends on your field of teaching. There is a tendency to be more to the left in many areas, but to be more to the right in other areas of the curriculum.
So not a lot of debating then with your fellow humanities professors. I'm sure they read the blog. They read your books.
And years ago, when I lived in New York, I had one colleague who taught political science like me, and he was a big Reagan fan, and I was not a big Reagan fan on what he was doing. So we had some spirited debates back and forth, yes. But honestly, Reagan, you know, although I didn't think he was as good as people thought, I definitely think that, you know, that he certainly is better than Nixon and certainly far better than Trump. And I was not trying to say Reagan was worse than Nixon at the time, but I just thought that he was short-sighted in many areas. But now, I mean, this is the lowest we've ever gone in the presidency. The presidency has been diminished dramatically by Donald Trump.
We've talked about him not discriminating against whom he attacks, and that would include members of his own party, because Trump isn't really a Republican. I see him as an independent, which...
He's not really a conservative either. Conservatives, yeah. So many conservative intellectuals who write for the National Review or the Weekly Standard condemn him. So many people that write columns that are conservatives, for newspapers and periodicals, other than the ones I mentioned, also condemn him. There's a long list, and I wrote an article on History News Network, and it was republished on Newsweek, listing 43 conservatives who condemned what Trump represents. So it's not just liberals, it's many Republicans and many conservatives who feel that way. And this is a few months back. It's only gotten worse.
Speaking of breaking news, this article was published 51 minutes ago, 10:01 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, by Chris Caliza, the CNN editor-at-large, someone who probably knows more than a little bit about current events. Essentially, what Mr. Caliza said was that, by his count, Donald Trump has personally attacked 11 senators, more than one in five of the 52-person GOP conference between his time as a candidate and his 9 months in office. Of course, Bob Corker is at top of the list. Jeff Flake, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham. I guess Cruz doesn't count because he was a presidential rival. John McCain, of course, Dean Heller, Mitch McConnell, not too far from here in Kentucky, Rand Paul from Kentucky, Lisa Murkowski, Little Marco Rubio, Ben Sasse, being kind of sassy.
Sass,
with,
actually, it's pronounced.
Sass, okay, I thought it was.
It might be sassy, but it's pronounced,
yeah,
sass.
Being sassy.
It's interesting. He's only 45. He's very photogenic. He's very conservative, but he really has condemned Trump from the beginning, and I point that out in that article that I wrote for HNN and Newsweek. He really is an interesting possible future presidential candidate for them.
Yeah, you and I talk about how I like to listen to replays of our show while I'm working out, and Donald Trump said, Ben Sasse looks more like a gym rat than a U.S. senator. How in the... I don't want to say this word. It rhymes with smell.
Did you get Susan Collins, I think. I don't think you mentioned her in that list. Well, did Saliza mention Susan Collins?
Only female I see is, well, Lindsey Graham is a guy. Lindsey's one of those unisex names.
Yes. But he mentioned Murkowski, but I think Collins, he is also attacked.
I don't see Collins.
Saliza, did he mention Susan Collins there?
I don't see Collins in the list. No, the only female would be Lisa Murkowski.
Well, that's interesting. I'm pretty sure he has criticized Collins, too, but... Point is, he's making enemies, and he expects to get things done by working against your own party. That is suicide, political suicide.
Might he be jealous of Ben Sasse being in good shape because Donald Trump golfs, and it seems like he's gaining weight instead of losing weight?
Yes, and also Ben Sasse has a PhD in American history. Get that. He is a PhD like I am in American history, and he was a college president in Nebraska. He's a very intelligent guy who ran for the Senate. He had never been in public office before, but had been a president of a college. And again, he's very conservative. I don't really necessarily agree with a lot of his views, but he's very responsible and decent in the sense that he does believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and is saying that Trump is a danger to that. And that's from a very hard-line conservative, not from somebody who's wishy-washy.
Looking at Ben Sasse's Twitter, he said he has 100-plus stitches in his head. So I guess he's rather athletic and not afraid to partake in extreme sports. He has a nice-looking family. So, again.
He's photogenic himself, which helps to look good on TV. It certainly helps. He's definitely considered as a possible candidate in 2020, along with John Kasich. They've both been mentioned as people who possibly challenge Trump or Pence, you know, in 2020, at least those two. Kasich, of course, is much older, mid-60s. But Sasse, I think, is someone to watch, really, for their side.
Of course, Nebraska, although it's almost in the geographical center of the country, doesn't have a lot of people. Most people probably couldn't even tell you where Nebraska was. Of course, I, as a geography geek, could.
I would just say south of South Dakota and north of Kansas. How's that?
But Nebraska Cornhuskers,
help,
yeah, I mean, they're a big team in the football and basketball business, which is, of course, big with Ohio State and the other local Big Ten and other major college teams. But being from Nebraska, Ron, would that kind of hinder his chances of being a president? I mean, Bill Clinton from Arkansas, so maybe not, but Nebraska not being a very important state, would that hinder his ability to run for a very high office?
I don't think so, because, I mean, I'm not saying only about winners, but George McGovern was from South Dakota, and he was the Democratic presidential candidate in 1972. And we've had others like Ed Muskie from Maine, which is a small state, who were running for president and were vice presidential nominee with Hubert Humphrey. I don't think for the Senate it matters if I don't think you necessarily have to come from a large populated state. In fact, it might even be negative to be from California or New York in many people's minds, or from Illinois. It might be better to be from a state that's in the heartland, and Nebraska is certainly in the heartland in the Midwest, and that might be a positive thing, really.
Of course, McGovern didn't do very well against Tricky Dicky, but you're saying just because you're not from New York or California doesn't mean that you wouldn't be from an important state. Nebraska is centrally located. It's not far from, I would say, major cities like Chicago or St. Louis, I mean, Denver. there are places that's nearby that I think have an impact. So I wouldn't, maybe I'm over-dramatizing that a bit.
Yeah, and also Eisenhower was from Kansas. He was born in Kansas. So, I mean, that didn't matter. And even Truman is from Missouri, a little bit bigger. But, I mean, Missouri is not considered, you know, a large state really either. So, I mean, we could go back and find quite a few presidents who came from states that are not major states, you know, or these candidates who ran and were the nominees who may have lost, but are not from major states. So it's not going to always be for the top 10 states in population, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. So bottom line is Donald Trump doesn't really discriminate against whom he insults. And, you know, I like the fact that he says what's on his mind, but I think he does take that way too far. And as we've said, he's not couth. Not a gentleman, like Obama.
I like that again, yes.
Obama, he's both Bushes, etc.
He said not Coos.
Right, and I think that's important. I mean, I say what's on my mind, too. First of all, I'm not president. But again, it depends upon the context. And again, with his crooked Hillary, his fake media, which offends me as a media person, I think he needs to maybe wash his mouth out with soap and water, as my mama always said. I'm not sure what this...
Yes, I want to say before we leave that the Kennedy assassination records are supposed to come out by Thursday unless they're stopped at the last minute. And so some people have been saying, now we'll find out whether Ted Cruz's father, as Trump said and has never rescinded, was involved in the Kennedy assassination. Of course, I'm laughing about it in the back of my mind because clearly he was not. But that's what Trump said about Ted Cruz's father. So I guess we'll be able to prove that that's the case if these records come out. And that will add to my book on presidential assassinations, with new material being, you know, coming out. My book, Assassinations, Threats in the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama.
So obviously, Ron, if we have the pleasure of being on with you next week, there will be no shortage of material, something transpiring almost every minute in the great world that we live in.
Hopefully nothing destructive or horribly damaging or causing loss of life, though, hopefully.
Thanks for being on, Ron. I am Adam.
Thank you so much again.
At WWGH. 1071.com.
You're listening.